So it's always a pleasure to be speaking with you, Leo. I want to talk about the historical significance of the Helsinki process and the role it plays in the world today. Would love to get some of your thoughts on that. And we've talked a lot about this, so I want to give the listening audience an opportunity to hear from you. You know, you have a very long seasoned career, 28-year foreign service career, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes,
Yeah.
As a specialist in NATO arms control, European security, that
Right,
sort of thing.
right.
That's
You
my area of
serve at the
specialty.
NATO desk in the State Department, right? Policy
Right.
leadership, senior negotiator role on U.S. delegations to NATO, the Helsinki Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe, and other things. But I wanted to sort of touch on the historical significance today, or what your thought of
Yes.
that is today. Because boy, today is a good time to talk about that, huh?
Yeah, you bet.
So what are your thoughts on that? How do you think it could apply today?
Well, I think the most important thing is what was its historical significance, which people may not be fully aware of, but was certainly an important reality of our whole post-World War II diplomacy. But effectively, the Helsinki Accords, which were sometimes called the Human Rights Accords, which were signed in August 1975 by President Ford, were very controversial at the time, but effectively the stakes couldn't have been higher because, number one, the Helsinki Accords were really a de facto post-World War II peace conference, which we never quite had in the same way we had the conference in Versailles after World War I. And of course, after the Napoleonic Wars, we had the Congress of Vienna, and but we didn't quite have that kind of a formal closure to World War II, because we went right into the Cold War right at the end of World War II. I mean,
Exactly.
Stalin stayed in Eastern Europe, which clouded the possibility of having a glorious peace conference. So, but this is kind of Helsinki, of course, we're kind of catching up there, kind of de facto peace conference. And they were quite remarkable in the sense when you reflect on World War II, it's not hard to understand why the Soviet Union was very, very interested in going to a post-war co conference like Helsinki. And number one, it was their opportunity to formalize the permanent division of Germany, right? Germany would never be reunited again, ever. And secondly, that it would also recognize their control, their hegemony, as we say in diplomacy, in their hegemony over Eastern Europe, their absolute total control of Eastern Europe. Those are the two things they wanted to celebrate, right? And it's understandable those were their goals in terms of what should the outcome of the war have been. And we managed, and we can go into more detail on that, to turn the tables on them in that respect. And actually, the Helsinki Accords turn finally resulted in the final irony was they did probably more than anything else to destroy Soviet control over Eastern Europe. Because the signature of those accords by all the Warsaw Pact states, all the communist states, put a lot of pressure on them to adhere to the Helsinki Accords, which is really the last thing in the world they really wanted to do, right? All the
Of
human
course.
rights agreements and so forth. Because
Sure.
we get them to sign, instead of a one-page document, which is what they're interested in, a 60-page document.
60 pages, was it?
The Helsinki Accords, 58 pages, 59 pages. But in great detail, mapping out the real outcome of the war and putting a lot of pressure on them. So very, very successful in removing their control. The other one was to really kind of define the new order of European security. What is the post-Cold War, basically, European security going to look like? And there was kind of a massive list of areas of cooperation. That's not just in human rights, but in business relationships and technology sharing and all kinds of things that that people were very interested in. Really, another form of what so what the final outcome of all this, we're going to have a much stronger regime of European security than we had considered.
Okay.
So it was truly a historic event. It was
Yeah.
very controversial at the time.
What made it most controversial, in your opinion?
Well, very controversial. For example, the I've got some kind of a thing here. Sorry, some kind of background.
No,
Somebody
that's
calling
okay.
me on the other
That's
line.
okay. I get the same thing. I get, somebody who calls me on my phone and it buzzes, it distracts me. It's like, yeah. So anyway, what I mean, what made it so controversial?
Well, for one thing, Governor Reagan personally was very, very critical of Ford for signing the Helsinki Accords.
Right.
They viewed it as a sellout.
Yep.
We should not be sitting down and negotiating with the Soviets under any circumstances about anything.
Right.
We had a very, very antagonistic relationship with the
Yeah.
Soviet Union, obviously. So for Gerald Ford to go even to go to this meeting and sit down with all the powers of NATO, Warsaw Pact, and all the neutral countries and agree to the outcome of the war was a huge step that Reagan thought was decidedly inappropriate. Of course, the
Yeah.
irony is much later he
Yeah.
himself signed this very important meeting treaty with Gorbachev many, many years later. But
Yeah,
at
isn't
that
that
time,
interesting? Yeah, I remember you telling me that. That's fascinating. Yeah.
but at that time in 1975. Reagan was very, very critical of Ford for signing the agreement.
Yeah.
And he also, in the party platform, the 1976 elections, right?
Okay.
Ford versus Carter, in that
Of
party
course.
platform, Reagan wrote in personally the rejection of the Helsinki Accords as part of the formal GOP party platform, right?
Wow.
Well, the
Wow.
presidential convention,
Okay.
not the convention.
Okay.
Denounced Ford strongly, very strong terms.
Okay.
So that was very, very, very controversial.
Huh.
Also, there were very strong reservations in the White House about this whole thing. They really thought the Allies weren't going to be strong enough to really hold the Soviets' feet to the fire,
Yeah.
and get our goals achieved at the conference, which didn't happen. I mean, we achieved our goals, but at the
Yeah.
time. And also, what happened was that Ford was asked during the presidential debate with Carter and by the press, "Well, why did you, Jerry? Why did you sign these Helsinki Accords after all?"
The good question. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
he made a very weak response. His response was, "Well, I never actually believed the way it came over is that I didn't believe that the Soviets had hegemony, had control, total control over Eastern Europe." What he meant to say was that I think when they signed the Helsinki Accords, I think there was some real hope for their losing their control over Eastern Europe, which would have been a much better statement. But it was a very weak statement, and he was really pilloried by the press. And he himself admitted this is the signing of the Helsinki Accords is why he lost the election to Carter. That's why he
Really?
lost.
No
And
kidding.
Ford admitted it himself.
Wow, I
Admitted
didn't
himself.
know that. I don't remember
Rumsfeld,
that
who was a
much.
very close friend of Ford, wrote a book about Ford, and he said the
Okay.
same thing. He made a big mistake
Yeah,
in what
yeah.
he said about signing the Helsinki Accords, which doomed
Huh.
his presidency.
Wow.
So
Okay. So that was a big
that
deal. I mean, obviously. I mean,
was a big deal, right? It was quite
look at the
important.
ramifications of that decision, right? Wow.
So I just want to kind of underline the historic significance of the Helsinki Accords. They really were in fact, quite remarkable. And kind of codifying the end of the World War II, so setting ground rules for the relationship between the communists and ourselves thereafter, in our interests, and in the impact on Ford. I mean, it was truly an historic event.
Yeah,
So I
for
just
sure.
want to kind of remind people, what were these Helsinki?
Those are
Why are you
good
still
points. Those are good points,
talking about
Leo.
them?
Do you think that universities today, even in high school, but let's say universities cover this subject well enough today? Do you think it still comes up in the literature and it's discussed, the importance of that?
Well, it's hard to measure that exactly.
It
I do
is.
know because
I'm
we've
just
done.
curious. I don't know if we either of us know the answer to that. I think what I'm trying to say is I hope that they do, or I wish that they would. because that seems to be a very important process, literally, that would play a big role today.
I'm not quite sure of the community of historians has as clear an understanding of the importance of the, partly because there's so much resistance to it. Kissinger also resisted it quite a bit, quite strongly. He
Okay.
felt
Why
that
did he? Why did he
well,
resist?
he felt that his idea of the relationship between the Soviet Union and ourselves should really be about nuclear weapons, and it
Okay.
should be and it should be it should be conducted only at the very highest level.
Okay.
The Allies were always complaining about Kissinger and Nixon wanting to have an era of negotiation with the Soviet, but they wanted to do all the negotiating over the heads of the Europeans. So they
Sure.
kind of cut out, and
Yeah.
they didn't really like that very well.
Huh.
So it didn't get quite as much recognition. I think in Europe, where the Helsinki Accords were very much more appreciated, I think that the more historians are going to be teaching more young people about Helsinki. You ask the kind of the men on the street in Europe who've gone through the European education process where they've heard of the Helsinki Accords, most people would say, yes, of course, the Helsinki Accords. But if you ask the man on the street in the USA about them, it's kind of a reflection of the fact of the coolness, more coolness towards them on our side, so
Yeah, that's
less
interesting. What
we're
a
likely to
difference. Yeah, what a difference.
the difference. But
Yeah.
certainly it should be taught more often. And
Yeah.
as you know, I recently published a book on the subject about the Helsinki process, and
You
my
did.
role in it,
You did.
and
Fabulous
my
piece of work. That was that, an honor to work with you down in the Bunch Library. And by the way, we're down in the Bunch Library last spring, I believe. And they were all very excited to participate in all of that. And by the way, I want to mention the website again, HelsinkiProcess.com, where people can see the book and order the book on Amazon. But they were I was impressed with the number of people that showed up that had such an interest in that piece of work that you and Mr. Goodby put together, quite a show.
Well, I mean, the kind of the heroes of the occasion was the Foreign Service. People like Ambassador Goodby and myself, and a lot of other people who worked on it over the objections of the White House and the skepticism politically by so many people on the right of the U.S. We did persist and basically won the day. So it's a great story, and we try to tell that story to add to a greater understanding. And as you know, we reached out to the historians. The American Historical Association publishes a directory of historians, which for every one of them shows exactly what they teach, the subjects they teach. And we did a mailing list of about 3,000 from that large directory
It
of
showed quite an
historians who are
interest.
teaching post-war history, post-war Europe, post-war diplomacy, the collapse of the Soviet Union, that whole subject area is covered by quite a few historians.
It's a
And
beautiful piece of work. It's a short book too. You've covered a lot in, not so many pages. I think that's what's best about it. It's a good read,
well, yes, and the American Historical Association pu publishes a whole series of booklets. They're called between 70 and 90 pages. So it's kind of a good outlet for us as well.
Yeah, for sure. Let me jump back really quick though, Leo, to CSCE. And tell me a little bit of your thoughts on them today, and their role CSCE today. Like how might that apply today, or what can we, the general public, do more of, in communicating with them? Do you see them as playing a role in what's going on in
Well,
the
that's an
world?
excellent question, and I have an excellent answer.
Okay, please.
As the official name of the Helsinki was the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe, Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe. But after some time passed, all the signatories wanted to keep the pressure on to make sure that, in fact, that we are, the Soviets are adhering to the terms of the Helsinki Conference. And the proposal began to come, let's create an organization that will carry on the Helsinki Helsinki conference. Now, this is a little later on, and Gorbachev himself saw the Helsinki conference as providing the new European home, as he called it. And he very much wanted to have an organization. And others liked the idea too. There's some resistance on the US side to an organization. People didn't want to create the impression this is replacing NATO, which was never its intention, but certainly would reinforce all the Western values that we cared so much for. So the idea of a conference really took hold. And 1990, they established one. It's headquartered in Vienna, in Austria, with over 4,000 people working there, right? The
Wow,
largest,
4,000. Okay. Didn't know it was that big.
and the whole purpose is to make sure that the parties in Europe kept adhering to the Helsinki Accords. That's the stated purpose of that organization.
Okay, that's an
So,
important distinction right there, right? Yeah.
and they do a lot of stuff. I mean, they have hearings on a lot of topics. They particularly are attentive to elections and make sure that elections are properly conducted throughout the whole area covered by the Helsinki Accords. It means our elections too. They even have people, check on our elections to make sure they're straight up and so forth. Some people have kind of resented that a little bit, but they do it, and they do it all over the place. Obviously, they're more interested in the Eastern European countries, but they have a monitoring function, monitoring the original Helsinki Accords, which is an important and valuable function.
What's interesting about that, Leo, is that when I poke around on LinkedIn and I go to CSCE or the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe, there's dialogue. There's people to this day that are actually having a dialogue about exactly what you're talking about. And I think if more people knew about that and involved themselves in that conversation, it might have a positive impact. So.
Well, sure. I mean, it's certainly what as we note in the book that if everybody had adhered and maintained their adherence to the Helsinki Accords, we might have had a European home for everybody, as Gorbachev wanted, and it might have been really used as the venue for settling all kinds of disputes, even current disputes. And but it just didn't work out. It was never legislated. The Helsinki Accords were never approved and ratified by all the parliaments of all the signatories and so forth. So that weakened it a little bit in terms of its enforcement value. It wasn't treated like a treaty, an accord, but not quite at the same level as a ratified treaty.
Not
So
in the traditional sense, sure.
that's one of the reasons why Mr. Putin had no hesitation whatsoever in violating all the provisions of the Helsinki Accord, which we note in the book at the very end. And
Indeed.
the promise would have been much greater had Mr. Putin not simply violated them. And there
Well,
was no way to, and of course, there should have been more of a response to that. But there have been a lot of criticism of Putin and so forth. But formally, within the framework of the OSCE, there should have been even stricter pressure on Putin not to do that and to take him to task for violating the Helsinki Accords. That could have been a stronger argument
Indeed.
in
And
terms of criticizing
and you're
Putin's
not
action.
alone, Leo. Like I said in LinkedIn, those type of conversations are coming up quite a bit, especially nowadays. That's front and center. And if you follow them on LinkedIn, the CSCE on LinkedIn, it's funny how these conversations still are taking place. Let me ask you a quick question. What do you hope people get out of the book? They read Helsinki Process. What do you hope they get out of that?
Well, I think and this is timely also. I think a somewhat greater appreciation of the role of the Foreign Service in our foreign policy. I mean, it was Nixon who kind of called for this new era of negotiations, and it was certainly encouraged by Henry Kissinger. But their idea was basically negotiations with the Chinese, right? And Mao Zedong, all that happened, and negotiation with Brezhnev, at the highest possible level. But I think what people would appreciate about the Helsinki Accords, it's really a tribute to the Foreign Service in a
Yeah,
way.
that's true. That's a
Historic
good point.
American achievement, relentless diplomacy.
Yep.
And in the book, we bring out the names and main figures in the Foreign Service, in addition to Goodby and myself, a
I
lot of
love
other
it.
Foreign Service people involved with that. So
I love
some
it.
greater appreciation of the Foreign Service,
Yeah. Good, good, good point. That's a good
which
point.
is under attack these days. But
Oh, you can say
the
that again.
State Department's like everybody else, they're going to hit pretty hard. But
That's right. You also, President Reagan conferred the Meritorious Service Award to you, right? You were awarded by him for that, right? For some
well, that was for a later negotiation.
a later
I
association.
was,
What was
I
that
had
for?
a strong, that was for the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces
Oh, that's
Treaty,
right.
the Reagan-Gorbachev Treaty,
That's right.
and which was a much different proposition.
Yeah.
And
We're gonna have to talk about that
it
another
was
time
very, we
too.
could talk about that some other time.
Yeah. But that was kind of cool, meeting President Reagan. That's neat too. In the book, there's a handful of pictures in the middle, as you know, where we have some really good pictures of you with, some of these folks. With I remember the with President Reagan. Yeah, several pictures.
The pictures of me with Rumsfeld also.
Yeah, Donald Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld was the ambassador to NATO
That's
while we
right.
were clearing. We had this long list of issues for negotiation with the East, which we developed in Washington to make our case
Yeah.
to define what we wanted to get out of the Helsinki Accords, which, as you know, was a very long list
Yes, yes,
as
yes.
opposed to the Soviet list.
Indeed.
But
Indeed.
I was, I went on after that to become the. I worked for 5 years on the Conventional Forces Treaty in Vienna between the NATO Warsaw Pact powers
Yeah.
to reduce conventional weapons,
Yeah.
which was a slow-moving negotiation, but eventually turned out to be a success. But I was there when we decided to resume the talks in Geneva over medium-range missiles, the SS-20s and so forth. And that's where Reagan and Gorbachev, that was really the reason why the venue that Reagan and Gorbachev chose to negotiate that treaty. So I was the State Department representative on that negotiations in Geneva, and when they were over, I headed up the administration's treaty ratification task force. Now that was a treaty, right?
That was an
And
official treaty for
under
sure.
our Constitution, treaties must be ratified by the Congress, by the Senate specifically.
Who'd have thunk? Yeah.
So
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time on the ratification,
Okay.
and of course Reagan was very proud of that treaty. One of his great, probably the greatest achievement of his whole administration,
Yeah.
the Reagan-Gorbachev Treaty, was quite a
Oh,
remarkable
yeah, you say that again. Yeah, absolutely.
I
Yeah,
was
that's
one of
neat.
the chief negotiators of that, and in appreciation after the signing, a lot of pictures of the signing of that treaty in the White House. Reagan and Gorbachev. I was there in the first row to
Yeah, the first row.
watch that.
Wow. That must have been
And
exciting.
yeah, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
We're
Yeah.
still initialing the copies of the treaty on the way to Washington for that ceremony. It was really
Yeah.
kind of a very last minute rush.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, I'll bet.
it worked, and it was a big success at
Do
the
you still
time.
have pictures? Do you still have the original pictures, signed pictures or anything, framed pictures of you guys together?
Well, I have the picture that appears in the book, and this in our book of
Yeah.
Reagan and myself shaking hands.
Yeah.
I was in a meeting at the White House
Yeah.
after the signing of the INF Treaty,
Wow, that's neat.
but to
That's neat.
just kind of underline my relationship with just again the role of the Foreign Service
Yeah, that's
and
exciting,
my
Leo. That's
personal
exceeding
role in
exciting.
these.
Yeah, that's why I want to share some of these stories, because I think they're wonderful stories, and I hope, there are going to be more of those to come. But I wanted to cover some of the basics on this, because there's just so much to talk to you about. We could probably spend 6 hours on this subject alone. So that's why I want to do these in half hour increments like this. And
Right.
I really do appreciate you taking the time to do this, because I think a lot of people will benefit from not just your wonderful history and your commitment to all of the different tasks you've done for our country, a great service, but you have a lot of good ideas, a lot of good ideas and a lot of good advice, that I think we can share with people.